7 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Live local talk over the hour. And Dalton can relay text to me at 343-0106 as we have had some internet challenges this morning, but we're working through it and it's okay. I did this radio thing before I had internet. I can do it without it.
Was internet supposed to make it all easier?
It was. And it then it came and it made a whole new set of challenges. But we can do it without it. We'll make it. We'll make it through. That is the voice of Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama Friday nights, but he joins us on Thursday mornings and lots to talk about. Thanks for coming back.
Good to be here. Good to be here.
All right. A quick review. You and I talked a little bit earlier today about the debates in retrospect. Anything you want to add to it? What's your takeaway now?
Well, what I talked about on the show last night, last Friday, was in terms of winners and losers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as I've told you several times, Senator Warren has consistently come across the best in terms of communicating what
it
is that she believes in. Right?
This is the academic part
yes. of just evaluating the debate.
Right.
So from an expectation standpoint, coming out, you would expect her to continue to do well. On the flip side, Vice President Biden, he needs to do better. Right. However, he did good enough, if you will, so that it would not negatively impact either his poll numbers or his ability to raise money.
Does he need to swing for the fences or does he need to play prevent defense because he's in the lead?
Prevent.
Yeah, that's what I would think, too, mm-hmm. is I know we're going to talk about some of the other people that got more attention after the debate, mm-hmm. Beto. But but it seems like if Biden cannot screw up any more than he's already screwing up. With the gaffes, if he can just kind of hold, then the others are all fighting for second place.
I got to push you on the operational definition of a gaffe.
Okay.
Right? So when you identify something that he's done that you would classify as a gaffe,
mm-hmm.
you ultimately have to determine whether it's going to impact his poll numbers or his ability to raise money.
Yeah.
At the point that it doesn't impact either of those two, then it's actually not a gaffe. What I was actually advocating when we talked about last week was more of his own independent ownership in terms of communicating what exactly he wants to do. As opposed to why it's only associated with the President Obama legacy.
But he was catching arrows for that because people would say, "Well, you want to cherry pick the things that we like during the Obama administration, and you want to deflect." It was y'all when it was good. It was exactly right. But it's interesting to me too the number of things that occurred in the Obama administration that now. Here we are just 10 years later, and really less, it depends on what term of President Obama, that there's Democrats that are critiquing these things that were, you know, part and parcel to the Obama administration. Now they seem like, that's yesterday's news. That's old thinking.
Well, it's all an extension of an ongoing story, right? So the story coming out of 2016 was when Senator Sanders presented the concept of Medicare for All.
Right.
So folks were initially trying to kind of ride that wave, given the impact that it had on him with his poll numbers
mm-hmm.
and his ability to raise money.
Yeah, before they shut him down.
And that's a whole other conversation that we could have in and of itself. But having said that, what you saw on stage were 10 candidates. Two candidates were essentially advocating Medicare for All. Senator Sanders, who had done it in 2016, and Senator Warren. Everyone else is not quite advocating it with that concept of removing private insurance.
Right.
It's some kind of permutation on Medicare for all who want to pay for it. With the continuation of private insurance.
Right.
So even though they initially started on that wave, as you start to kind of shave around the edges,
it's what you and I talked about
last week. It's that move back to the center, so it's a way to be able to play both sides.
All right, let's talk about Robert Francis. Let's talk about Beto here.
Okay.
This is, I would argue, what his line here about taking back the rifles may be good for his fundraising with the T-shirts and everything, but I think it's good for President Trump.
Okay.
I think coming out to basically say, we are coming for your guns, you know, we are coming for your guns, helps Republicans, helps the president. Even those people that might have been like, well, you know what, there's really not a lot of difference between the attitudes from both sides of the aisle on guns or this or that, and the president has broken ways with the NRA on some things.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have a candidate say, heck yes, we're coming for your guns. I think that helps President Trump maybe on the edges galvanize some support.
I actually don't think it really helps him at all.
Okay.
And the reason why is I don't think it's going anywhere. So
well, these,
think about
these,
it.
But it's the rhetoric that makes people, the gun sales.
Sean, you start talking about rhetoric, you're going to get yourself in trouble again.
I stay in trouble, man. Okay. I'm not scared of trouble. I'm not scared of trouble. You know me. Okay, so I'll say this about rhetoric. During the 8 years of President Obama's term, he didn't really move much on gun legislation at all, if anything. But gun sales mm-hmm. were the highest they've been in our country, I think maybe ever.
That sounds right.
Because
I haven't checked that, but I
think I'm correct there.
Right.
Because the fear of something happening. Same thing here. You could say, well, Beto's not, there's nothing actually going to get done. But the fear of it would move somebody like me to say, there's a guy I got to make sure for sure the Republicans win. A guy like this cannot get in who wants to come take our rifles.
But this goes to the reason why I don't think there's much concern about it. So in order for something to happen in the Democratic caucus and it actually to become mainstream with everybody, what you would have to have is internal consensus that everybody wants to line up behind that policy, and that's not the case. So even on the show last week, one of my Democratic friends had called in who, like you and I, is a gun owner and a concealed carry permit holder. And it's like, hey, look, we may need to have some conversations about this, but we're not advocating for any type of mandatory buyback. Until that actually became a mainstream view just within the Democratic caucus, there's no fear that it's actually going to end up going forward.
Yeah, but there's things that have moved into becoming, let's say, mainstream to the Democratic idea that 10 years ago would have seemed far-fetched.
For example.
Okay. We're talking about healthcare.
Okay.
Talk about, you know, this Medicare for all.
Okay. So you would have thought that with all the repeal and replace rhetoric mm-hmm. that was there, that you wouldn't necessarily have a Republican Party basically at this point in time advocating in favor of that as a counter to something like Medicare for all.
Which means it's moved. The discussion has moved.
But the discussion has actually ended up moving in the right direction. And see, this is a distinction when you start talking about the issue of gun safety. Now, here's the thought part that I think we may actually be able to get through, and this is actually kind of exciting. So when we talk about the issue of universal background checks
mm-hmm.
and where, as a society, we have moved on that issue. And unfortunately, the situation that actually happened in El Paso, Texas, that was an individual who got the weapon that he used through essentially that gun hold loophole that we talk about.
You're talking about the gun show loophole.
Gun show loophole, thank
right.
you. He had originally tried to do it through a licensed dealer and had been rejected and then was able to get that gun another way. So if we're actually able to move that legislation forward, this is the one, by the way, that's sitting on the Senate Majority Leader's desk that mm-hmm. he actually won't put on the floor to vote. The idea that we may be able to get that done, even though there's some rhetoric happening over here on the left that's rhetoric that we're not necessarily aligned to, that ultimately is a good thing.
I would argue that what Beto had to say pushed the president away from playing ball on that, and I don't know about Mitch McConnell himself, but it
Wait,
definitely
you
pushed
you mean
it.
To tell me the president needed somebody on the Democratic side for him to change his mind?
Well,
he does this all the time.
He does, but he at this point, you know, if he's going to be moving on something, there's been a lot of people that are staunch Second Amendment advocates that have not been very happy with certain things the president has done.
Right.
Okay. You have a situation where
was anybody
put out
arguing in favor of bump stocks?
Me.
Okay.
Me.
Tell me why.
Because it's a piece of polycarbonate that's an additional, you know, add-on to a rifle. It's not a rifle itself. It is a piece of plastic.
Which means there's no constitutional amendment that protects that.
So let's talk about this. Let's talk about the fact that you now have a situation where you have made things illegal. It's ipso, I can't ever say it.
Ipso facto.
Yep. Right? So when bump stocks were made illegal, people that owned those bump stocks were now, if they did not turn them back into the government, they were now felons.
Okay, so you would have been more in favor of not continuing to sell bump stocks and then letting
grandfather.
That's fair.
All right, coming right back, more with Robert Kennedy Jr. as we bounce these ideas around, and we'll talk to you as well. 343-0106 on the text line. FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings, glad to have you along. And something we do on Thursdays to get you ready for Kennedy for Alabama on Friday nights. Robert Kennedy Jr., our guest in studio. I'm going to finish up a little bit here on this Beto thing, but which I think if you just look at the name recognition of politics.
Okay.
And tell you what, you saw that with President Trump when he was running for office, how to get yourself in a news cycle mm-hmm. and how to stay dominant in the news cycle. He's
right.
still the master of that. O'Rourke did did pretty good with that. I mean, that comment to me is infuriating, but I also get from a political angle, he's been, we've all been chatting about him since.
Yeah, particularly on this issue, right? And so the part of your argument that was actually valid was the idea that as it stays in the news
one
cycle,
part that was valid?
There was
listen
only
that
one.
Underhand.
Sean,
look at that.
Sean, at least I gave you credit for that.
Yes.
Nothing else,
here's
right?
a setup and a trap, right? Now watch me get out of it. Okay, go ahead.
That it keeps it in the news cycle, and it keeps kind of churning up a topic that continues to fuel fear.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I was at the gun range here a couple of weeks ago, just kind of keeping up to track on my proficiency, and we just kind of got to talking about the whole thing, and that is the one point that gun owners and gun shop owners in particular talk about. That's this notion of they're going to take our guns.
Mm-hmm.
So it ends up feeding that narrative.
And so that's why I think, you know, while that might be a good rallying call for some Democrats that would support Beto, send money that way, it also works on the other side. And I think it helps the president. I think it helps raise money for different groups, you know, that are Second Amendment advocate groups.
Well, the reason
I mean,
why
I
would
run an ad with him in there saying and showing that T-shirt, we're coming for your guns. That might motivate somebody who hadn't made that donation recently to NRA or another group to do that.
But I actually said I didn't conclude that it helps the president. The reason why is he's not the nominee. And so for that to be the issue that wins him the nomination, you would have to have consensus within the Democratic caucus, and that's not going to happen.
But
because you have a lot of Democrats in Alabama that are just – no, the people in Alabama think deeply. The people who are gun owners think deeply. Those folks are not going to have it. They're not going to make him the nominee on that issue. They wouldn't do it.
Okay. We'll disagree there. And, okay. And we'll have to have another discussion on the ipsos facto of the bump stock. But yeah, okay. I was one of about seven people in the United States that was bothered by everybody else acquiesced, the NRA. I said, here comes a sacrificial lamb on bump stocks. And it's not because I want everybody to have bump stocks, but I think there's a very fair argument to be made. Even though this is unpopular, we are a country that, you know, if we're here to defend individual liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, to tell people who bought something legally
right.
that thing they have now, they must turn it in or they are now felons. Even during Prohibition, I had a bunch of people send me things about Prohibition, so I went back and studied. If you had bought liquor when Prohibition went in, you still could have the liquor that you had then. You didn't have to give it up. You just couldn't buy any more.
You're talking about a commodity that at some point is going to be expired anyway. An apple and a monkey wrench.
If you run that bump stock long enough, you'll have components go out. So
that's true.
So there you go. We're a week out. Well, yeah, about a week out from that debate. Do you think fundraising wise, which is a real story this far out, who's got the money flowing in? Is it still Biden got the money?
It's still the big three. It's going to be Vice President Biden at the top with Senator Sanders doing his thing and Senator Warren kind of wrapping up. I think Representative Beto O'Rourke will have some fundraising that comes out of this, but his larger issue has been establishing a footprint outside of the state of Texas, and I don't see this having a long shelf life for him to do that.
All right. See on your list here, this is interesting because I think I know the subject, but I don't know the specific here, California's Fair Play Act.
Yeah, this is interesting. So this just came through the California legislature, and it's on its way to the governor right now. And basically what it's doing is it is allowing the student athlete the opportunity to profit from their autograph, from their likeness, et cetera, et cetera. They've actually put things in the legislation that basically prevents the NCAA from holding them accountable for doing so.
I love it. So we agree. I've been pushing
shocking.
This. Yeah, one of my unpopular opinions for a long time. I think there should be the fact that these college athletes are bringing so much. Now, I think it should be. Now, people say, well, I want the athletes paid, and we want it to be across the board the same amount. I think it should be commensurate with the program you're in. And, you know, you look at, I mean, I'm sorry, this will make people unhappy, but at the University of Alabama, the football team brings in tons of money. Basketball team brings in tons of money.
Right.
Lacrosse, and y'all, I played a little bit of lacrosse. Don't get mad. Lacrosse is not bringing in the money. So I don't think lacrosse player should get
I didn't know what lacrosse was until I went to the Naval Academy.
All those folks up there play lacrosse.
Yes, they do.
And it was the people that introduced me were from Virginia.
They were like, bring your lacrosse stick with you. I was like, what is that?
We don't have those down here. Okay.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm for the athletes being able to get money. Because people say, well, you know, they shouldn't do it. They're doing a job. If you go work at the rec center, and I know they have scholarship, but even with the growth, and I'll just talk about my alma mater, University of Alabama, even with the big growth and what it costs to go to school compared to when I was there, you're still, the value they're bringing is above and beyond the cost of the books and room. And I think because, and they also don't have time to go work at the rec center or go work at the campus store or whatever because they're at practice.
Sean, I'm going to make this really simple for you. If anyone gets paid, then everyone should get paid.
Yes.
It's just a matter of figuring out how to do it. So if you think Nick Saban getting the salary that he gets now is a result of what athletes are actually doing on the field.
And so and his ability. I mean, it's not like you and I could go in there and do what Nick Saban's doing, right?
I mean, I could go into some of these Division I football programs and probably coach them to lose.
Right? Okay, good.
But I'm probably not going to be coaching a national champion in football anyway. But that's the idea. So somehow people should be able to benefit from their labor.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people talk about, hey, they get scholarships and stuff like that, and room and board. And that may be the case, but that doesn't necessarily feed them on Saturday afternoon. That doesn't necessarily help them if they want to go out for a date on Saturday night. And so if you ended up putting something in their pockets where they're benefiting somehow from that, it actually ends up being better for the student athlete. Now, the question we really should be asking is, why are people opposed to this?
People have told me over time that it sullies the scholar athlete. It changes this idea of the scholar athlete. It's a diminishment of this great institution.
So when we put the dream team in basketball, right? We did that, of course, because we got to the point where we were no longer competitive on the international stage.
And then we changed that.
Right. Did it destroy the Olympic spirit because now you have professionals playing? No. It just increased the level of competition.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do it across the board, and I said this when I was in one of my social media rants the other day, the NCAA is going to lose this issue. They are ultimately going to lose it because what's going to happen is all the schools on the West Coast are going to align. So it's going to be California, Oregon, Washington, and then Hawaii. Somebody in the Midwest is going to do it. It's going to be like Ohio or something like that. And then as soon as somebody in Alabama or somebody in Texas makes that decision, it is game over. Because ultimately, it's about the money, and they know they're going to need those schools in those big states that are very, very positive on football. They're going to need them to continue to exist.
All right, and Dalton, who talks about sports all the time, I mean, this because this is like, for some people, this is like a third rail they never want to talk about. But
Well, yeah, and with California kind of making the move on it, and now New York also, the time is, you know, it's if or it's when, not if. Yep. I think at this point, like Robert just said, but I do disagree. You know, I know people that have gone to college and play a sport where they don't even really have to play, whether it's, you know, some golf teams or like Sean mentioned, lacrosse. If Tua Tagovailoa sells, you know, millions of jerseys.
Yeah.
He should, I think, be making a lot more money than his backup, Mac Jones, who probably wouldn't be selling much. And you think he probably will eventually make more money than his backup or most quarterbacks once he makes it into the NFL. But yeah, across the board, paying everybody the same, that wouldn't really make so much sense to me. I do think, you know, if they've got their jerseys for sale in the student center or if the NCAA video game has their likeness, they should be paid equal to, you know, whatever kind of money they're bringing in individually.
Yeah, but no matter what you decide, it's going to be more than it is now, which is zero.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then the other thing that I like to mention is some of the other sports that folks talk about that are not necessarily the revenue generators, they have a tendency to be played by people from communities who aren't necessarily challenge to have that money on Saturday or Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the other thing that I like to bring into mind as well.
We could go through game by game or sport by sport and player by player, or maybe make a bunch of different. I mean, that's I think that's a broad brush.
Yes, it was intentional.
That's why we'll pick it up next week and talk more about it. As always, man, I appreciate it. Show tomorrow night.
Kennedy for Alabama, 6 o'clock p.m. Listen in. We're going to have the chief of police call in, and we'll have a really good show talking about some issues of policing community.
At 8:37 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Mobile Mornings on this Thursday. Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama, Check them out tomorrow night and every Friday night here at FM Talk 106.5, part of the 45 hours a week of live local programming we're providing around here. Also, heads up, this segment of the show brought to you by the folks over at Lightstream. It's a fact, refinancing your credit card balances can lower your interest rate and save you money. And you don't have to be a financial expert to do it. Right now, you can get a credit card consolidation loan from the folks at Lightstream with a rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay. That's lower than the average credit card interest rate, which is 19% APR nationally. It means you can save thousands of dollars in interest, get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are no fees. No application fee, no origination fee, no transaction fee, no prepayment penalties. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply, and the online application is so easy, you can apply right from your phone. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. So y'all can apply now and get a special interest rate discount on top of the great rates. The only way to get that discount, though, is to go to the website lightstream.com/Sullivan. lightstream.com/Sullivan, my last name, S-U-L-L-I-V as in Victor, A-N, subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Sullivan for more information. And also, it is a Thursday. We get to talk to another Rob. We got Robs and Roberts and Bobbies all through our Thursday morning. This one, our buddy Rob Hulbert from Lanyap. Hey, man.
It's very Robert heavy this morning.
It's Robalicious for sure. We're going to talk about the new issue of Lanyap. I want to talk about Civic Center with you. But before that, something we did talk about during the news break there that we just finished talking to Robert Kennedy Jr. about, and that's athletes and getting paid, college athletes getting paid. Your take on that?
Well, I mean, as I told you off air, you know, my knowledge comes of college business comes from watching the movie The Social Network. But if those kids are on scholarship and they're able to create, you know, Facebook while with the knowledge they learned on scholarship at Harvard or whatever, you know, and nobody asked for their money, nobody said they couldn't do that. Why? I don't know why it's not okay for college students to, you know, if somebody's using their likeness in a video game or they're selling jerseys with their names on it, why can't they get any of that? It's a side gig. Or somebody calls and says, hey, you know, we want you to represent a shoe. That's really not on the field. That, to me, that seems like they ought to be able to do that.
And, you know, in that same vein, there have been athletes who have created their own, like, YouTube channels, and it might not have anything to do with what they do on the field or in play.
Are they unboxing Shopkins? Or
yeah, in some cases. And the NCAA has shut them down. They said, you know, you got to choose. Do you want to make money off of your YouTube channel doing whatever it is you're doing over there, or do you want to play sports? And to me, that just makes zero sense.
Well, we try to act like this is some sort of a very pure program. But you have coaches making, you know, $8, $9, $10 million with $10 million buyouts, and you know, it's so massively unfair in a lot of ways. And you know, I don't know why these students can't get a little bit of, if they're doing something, you know, nobody can keep your student. If you're a student, you can go out and mow lawns or do other things on the side to make a little money. These guys can't do that. Yeah. You know, they can't really do those things. They don't have time for it. So, you know, I just don't see why they can't make any money. I don't see how it's going to hurt the play on the field or the integrity of the game, if there is any.
Yeah, and one more argument I saw with a lot of former college athletes and current college athletes speaking out online about it is that, you know, a lot of people who argue against athletes being paid say, well, they're getting education for free, they've got this scholarship. There are plenty of athletes who's if the major they want to enter, if that schedule doesn't line up with their practice schedule, the university basically says, you know, too bad, pick a major that fits when you can get out there on the football field.
Right.
So that's an argument against the free education being enough.
Is it really free? I mean, yes, it's free, but they're actually, in a lot of these cases, are making money for the school. So it's not like, you know, somebody said to me, well, we're paying for their education. I'm like, are you really? Because a lot of these guys, you know, some of these big programs are actually making some money.
Oh, yeah, big time. That's what I said, and just specifically for University of Alabama. Yeah. You know, I'm looking at the even though the tuition's gone way, way up since way back in the old days when I was a student there. But it's not commensurate. The amount of money that comes into the program versus what their room, board, and tuition is, they're getting labor, you know, for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, and on top of that, let's also think about how many students go to Alabama because they want to go to the football games, they want to see those players play, and all those things. I mean, that's all part of the process of recruiting the other students on campus. Mm-hmm. You know, it actually brings in, it's all part of what they do. It's a big part of the persona of a lot of these big schools. You know, the student who says, I'd like to go to a school that has a big football program and go to games on campus and do those things, that's what I want to do. You know, so it's all part of it. It brings something in for the rest of the school. I don't, you know. So in the meantime, we say, well, you guys can't make any extra money, though.
Yeah,
we're going to sell those jerseys. Don't you worry.
Yeah, even the physical manifestations, I think, bothered me the most about it when the university, not just like you said, that it's getting, you know, people to come to that college and get in the seats, and that's one thing. But when they go out and sell your jersey with your number and name, or put you in a video game, I would lose my mind if I was one of those folks. I'm like, dude, cut me something here on it.
Yeah, I mean, especially when they put you in a video game, to me, that is absolute use of your likeness. I mean, I don't see how in the world you can't get paid for that. You know, anybody else would. It's like they are probably the only people in the world who aren't getting paid for the use of their likeness in that kind of situation.
All right, shifting gears here. I've had about a day to digest this. Mayor Sandy Stimson talked with us yesterday on the Midday Show about the Civic Center Plan B, I guess the next version here. What's your take?
My take is that I think we're getting back to sanity here with what we're talking about doing at the Civic Center, and I think that you know what the mayor is talking about makes the most sense. That's what I thought from the beginning. Kind of, you know, what we really need to look at was what's it going to take to revamp the Civic Center we have. Is that going to be cheaper and better and easier than rebuilding, you know, building a new one, or doing, you know, the other plan that was just to tear it all down and not have any sort of arena? I didn't think was a winner at all, and so this just makes a lot more sense to me to look at the whole concept of can we do something, can we retrofit this thing so we can get the rigging up to current standards, so we can have bigger shows there and do those things. You know, it's already hosting a lot of events, and there's just a lot going on there already. It satisfies the Mardi Gras issue. It makes more sense to me. I think that's the road they ought to be looking down. And, you know, I say what happened, I think, is they came back, found out the Cordish was also asking for a whole lot of money, and, you know, that to do what they were going to do, and the city was going to end up paying a lot with either way. And you know, in this situation, some of what the mayor has outlined, if it can all get done, it opens up some new green space downtown, or some new land mm-hmm. downtown that has the potential to maybe be another hotel, things like that, that really could be a real driver in there.
Yeah, we'll come back from the break. I want to talk more about this, because there's that idea, but then you've got to get Cordish to agree to one part of it, and then even like something as narrow as talking about the residential there, the townhouses or apartments. You've got members of the city council that have been vocal about not wanting to approve a deal that had any kind of real estate in it. We continue that conversation with Rob Hulbert with Land Yap when we come back. FM Talk 106.5, and it is Mobile Mornings on a Thursday. Sean and Dalton talking with our buddy Rob Hulbert from Land Yap. New Land Yap out on the streets now. If people want to pick up a copy, where exactly would they find one of these Land Yaps you speak of?
If you see a pink or purple box, there's one in there for sure. And there's bars, restaurants, coffee shops. We're all over the place, 1,500 different locations, grocery stores. But you also can go online at Land Yap Mobile, and you can read it all there, and that gets you the stories from both sides of the bay, the Eastern Shore and Mobile side, and also breaking news throughout the week.
All right.
So, good stuff there too.
And yeah, absolutely. That helps y'all do more and more of the reporting that we love so much.
That's right. That's it. You know, it keeps us going.
All right.
Keeps this area having a newspaper.
Let's talk about, speaking of things you're looking at with the newspaper. So going forward here, we're talking about the Civic Center Plan B. And you said it looks like a lot more workable of a deal than what was out there originally. But let me just ask questions here.
Sure.
Those things have to be signed off on. This is kind of a wish list. I think the mayor said that to me yesterday.
Right.
So Cordish has to say yes, right, that they would work this deal and they find something that's that they can work and make money and bring their part of it in. And then I remember things like, I look at the design, had these townhouses and apartments and buffer areas and all this. Wasn't it members of the city council just months ago said they would not vote on something that had residential as a component?
Well, you know, I know LaVon Manzi has said that he is absolutely against residential in that area. Now, the previous plans, again, remembering that the RFQ called for residential to begin with, But the original plan, I think, that the Sterling Properties put out had some pretty big apartment complexes. These are much smaller. But, you know, the thing about it is those things would generate money for the project, so it helps offset any sort of money the city would be paying. You know, it helps make payments on any kind of bond or something that might be issued to get the Civic Center fixed up. So, I mean, those are things that... you know, they're going to have to be some money generators in those areas to help the city pay for stuff, and it takes it off everybody else's back, and it makes sense. You know, the concept that there's not any room down there for some townhouses, I think, is, you know, there's all this issue about whether there's quote unquote gentrification occurring. I think that's really a non-issue. You know, I hope nobody's going to vote against it just because of that, because it doesn't really seem like a real issue. It seems more like a personal issue.
And speaking of possible personal issues, or the fact that we have punted the fiscal year into the next fiscal year because of a lawsuit, right?
Yes.
To explain what's going on.
Well, it's just more of the same, Sean, as we've talked about over and over again. This lawsuit is, in fact, hindering the business of the city council.
We were told by both sides.
I know. We've been told over and again that this doesn't mean anything. It doesn't do anything. It's not. But it is actually creating problems. Once again, this has to be settled. And I really, really, really wish the judge would make a ruling or something and do something to expedite it, because it is just time for these things to happen. We've dragged this thing out for way too long, and it is wasting money and it's wasting time. And it really, the only way it's ever going to get solved, as we'll say, just put on the broken record, it's only going to get solved when somebody tells both sides, this is what you can do.
Right. And not some agreement. I want to know what the law is. I do not want to re-adjudicate this in an administration down the road.
We don't need peace in our time. We need to get this done. Yeah.
The mayor's office can do this. The council can do this. These are their employees. These are their employees. They can fire this person, not fire this person. Put it down in writing and get done with it. I'm over it.
Yep. That's what it needs to be. I totally agree. I think if that happens, you'll see a lot more... you know, see a lot of this animosity go away.
Yeah, because there's no reason
they can work. They'll know what they can and can't do.
I mean, is that such an odd concept that we should have? Number one, how we've gotten to this point, you know, because this has been a question that I guess was never asked before this council, this administration. But let's get it figured out now so we never have to deal with this time wasting again.
It's like if you've got two kids and they've got several toys they're playing with, and they're trying to play together, but they're fighting over those toys, and you just take it and say, okay, these are yours, you can't touch each other's toys,
right.
And all of a sudden, all the fighting goes away, right?
Right.
That's kind of it.
But the whole time, this is costing the taxpayers money.
Costing money, it's costing time, it's just, it is, it's wasting time, it's wasting goodwill, if there's any left, so it's just, it's really just need to get it taken care of, and they've even finally stopped making the claims that it's not affecting what they're doing, thankfully. You know, in the early days of this, it's not affecting what we're doing at all.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Everything's good. Nothing to see here.
Yeah, that's not the case.
Hey, quickly before we wrap up, have just a minute here, but tell folks when they pick up the new copy of Lagniappe, music festivals?
Yeah, we've got a story on just looking at music festivals. It's another issue. 1065 announced that it's not coming back, and then there's some discussion. I know Councilman Manzi has talked about putting $300,000 into trying to get another festival downtown. The mayor's office says, you know, hey, we love the idea of festivals, but maybe let's think about doing four festivals and much smaller ones, kind of using the seed money, have people come in and say, we can put this festival on and give us some ideas. You know, their concept is let's try to do four different things and see if some of them catch on and really become bigger on their own and not become such a big city project. But, you know, there apparently is some desire to continue music festivals in Mobile, but what form that's going to be in is still up in the air.
There we go. Rob, as always, we appreciate your time. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
We will do. Rob Holbrook checking in from Lagniappe, and we'll be back at noon today for Midday Mobile. Mike Gallagher, who was in the studio yesterday, came to Mobile, will be back, I think, in his New York studio today, and he's on the way next. By the way, go check out the pictures when we had Mike Gallagher and Mayor Sandy Stimson in our lobby at the same time. It was a busy day yesterday.
You were the mediator right there in the middle.
That's right. That's what I'm here for.